Before you go on with this case, I did want to ask you, because you mentioned the fact that there's no correlation. And I remember when the Comfort trials came out and, you know, ruxolitinib became available, it was so exciting. But at that point, when we were surveying general oncologists, there was sort of a misunderstanding, you know, probably based on their experience with, you know, I don't know, using TKIs for EGFR or lung cancer or whatever, that ruxolitinib would only work if you had a JAK mutation. Do you think that the word has gotten out on that? Or are you seeing people in second opinion who weren't considered for ruxolitinib because, you know, they didn't have a JAK mutation?
Well, I still see it, but I see it very occasionally that the clinician thinks the patient might not. It's more actually the patients think that they might not. I think the clinical community has really got that now. Actually, JAK activation can occur with any of the driver mutations. And in fact, we even see JAK activation in patients with so-called triple negative disease. I think that message has gotten out there. Not quite to the patients. We struggled a bit in Europe and in the UK with reimbursement based on, well, this patient doesn't have a mutation. So it's not only the patients and the physicians, it's also the payers. And, you know, we all have to deal with them in different guises. And I think as well that another corollary of that is, well, should I be measuring JAK allele burden in the same way that if you're treating a CML patient with imatinib, dasatinib, nilotinib, for example, well, absolutely, you have to measure the BCR-ABL mutation burden, and we've got key kind of warning levels, et cetera, where we should be thinking about early change of therapy. But that's completely not the case with ruxolitinib at the present time in myelofibrosis.